Hi, and welcome back to Talking Big Data. I'm David Pittman, the social business leader for IBM Big Data. And my guest today is Brian Velmuer. Brian is an analyst, consultant, and a frequent keynote speaker on such topics as the alignment of emerging technology with strategy, innovation, and the overall customer experience. He was also a featured guest on a recent Twitter chat where the topic was the impact of digital innovation on customer experience. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
Really great to have you here, and it was a really exciting and energizing Twitter chat. It's always so fun to be on those. There are hundreds of chats or tweets going through. How did you even manage to keep up with the whole chat stream?
Well, I think that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
I quite frankly, I had a challenge. I was trying to answer, but also there was so many other great answers and perspectives, and I think it could have gone on for a while. I think that hour went by. It felt about like it was 20 minutes just because of the volume and the richness of the conversation, for as rich as Twitter can actually be.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Those chats take place every Monday at noon Eastern time, and you're right. That is the fastest hour of the week for me. Well, one of the things that came up in that conversation was, again, it was all around the impact of digital innovation on the customer experience. So I'd like to start out just by asking you, what are some of the ways that you see digital innovation is impacting us as customers?
Well, I think in order to answer that, I think we need to broaden the conversation. And, you know, I guess my view on it is, yes, it certainly impacts customer experience. That's where I spend a lot of my time, you know, in the realms of customer experience, customer service, marketing, sales, any customer interactive division or function within an organization. But I think when we're talking about digital innovation, we have to recognize that that's happening at a societal level and at a global level. And I think if we understand that just as humans, quite frankly, if we're talking about person-to-person interaction, more and more of our lives are being conducted in a digital format. You know, if we go back 20 years, you know, most of our lives weren't. But now today, with these little things we carry around in our pocket, you know, who we know, what we think, what we're eating, where we're going, who we're connected to. All of these things now are being recorded digitally. And once they're in a digital format, there's opportunity, first and foremost, to get a more granular understanding of a person in real time, depending on the network and the channel and what have you. And I think, going back to the original question, if an organization can understand more about their customers, either in aggregate or at an individual level, in real time, then at least there's the potential and there's the opportunity for them to respond in a way that resonates, whether that be creating an offer in a B2C environment or understanding where that customer is in the sales process from in a B2B environment, and maybe providing the right information, you know, relative to their to their maturity and relative to where they are in the buying process. And so I think just understanding the context that more and more of our collective lives are happening in the digital format, what that does is really just give us a greater opportunity at a deeper understanding of who the other person is, whether that be in a commercial or simply a non-commercial format.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned opportunities there at both the individual and at an aggregate level. Do you care to go into maybe some examples of both of those? That's always one of the hot topics, I think, in the CXO chats. You have two different camps that say,
yeah,
oh, it's only valuable as an aggregate, and other people that say, oh, no, big data is all about the individual. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, I think, I mean, let's look at a really simple example that I think everybody can understand, especially in a business context, especially the sales folks out there or those that meet people at trade shows and so on and so forth. Today, and this is dramatically different than what it was 20 years ago, when I, you know, met David Pittman, or when I was introduced to David Pittman, What did I do? Well, I go to, you know, Google, and I say, who is this guy? And often that leads to a LinkedIn profile, so on and so forth. And so at its very basic level, everybody can understand that, well, at an individual level, I can understand who David is, what his role is. Nobody had to tell me who you were. I just got an email address, and I figured all that stuff out on my own. If you're on Google Plus or if you're on Facebook, and we're talking about social networks at the moment, that just gives me a deeper context of who you are as a person. And so when we pick up the phone for the first time, I probably know a decent amount about you. There are other enterprise-level solutions that provide similar insights, especially in the context of sales in a B2B environment where I might know who you're connected to, what common connections we might have within my company and your company. And there are sales organizations today that are using that to plan effective strategies of how are we going to target this account? You know, how are we going to make connections to the right decision makers and get in front of the right people? And how are we going to leverage our personal network in order to do that? That concept isn't necessarily new. That's been happening for a really, really long time. However, what digital allows us to do is to find that information in a much more rapid fashion or in a way that was never even possible before. So that's just one example, and we could talk probably for an hour just on that topic and the different use cases. Going to the question about in aggregate, most people probably listening are familiar with, you know, the greater social listening or sentiment analysis of, you know, here's what people are saying about our brand, here's what people are saying about us, here's where they go. But I think it extends beyond that, and, you know, while I'm focusing on social, I want to make it very, very clear that, you know, social, it matters, but I'm not quite sure that it matters as much as people think. But it does matter in the context of a broader spectrum of digital and a broader spectrum of customer understanding. If I can combine some social data, and maybe there may be some insights there that give me clues about, well, generally speaking, here's what people are saying about us. But if I can merge that with data that we're getting from other channels, for instance, you know, maybe I'm seeing spikes or certain sentiment or certain keywords happen on social networks, and all of a sudden I realize after watching this for two or three cycles that when I begin to see certain things happening on social networks, all of a sudden, you know, the call center volume begins escalating, and I can prepare for that. And I do know organizations that have noticed that trend, and when they see certain things, all of a sudden they're preparing the call center to proactively respond, or they're using social networks to actually proactively respond to, you know, to a problem that's noted. And so I think it is both and those are two really quick examples. And again, we could probably take either one of those topics and spend an hour or two or three, you know, talking about, you know, how digital plays a role in both a B2C and a B2B environment. The last thing I'll say, and I've been rambling here for a couple of minutes, though, is I think those notions of B2C and B2B, they still do matter, but I think they matter much less than they did previously. As we move into a networked world, where, you know, this whole conversation has been talking about humans and people, but by the way, machines and appliances and cars and all these other inanimate objects are also being connected to a network. Okay, so if we think about, you know, both people and things being connected into a network, both of them certainly having the ability to, well, some things in that network having the ability to generate digital signals, and the other things in that network being able to read and interpret digital signals, and some of those things, many things in that network being able to do both, I think that B2B and B2C become slightly less important as we recognize that people, organizations, machineries, pieces of machinery are actually just nodes in a network and communicating with each other in real time.
That's a really interesting observation. I really like that. We are all just sort of nodes in the network, aren't we?
I hate to dehumanize us, certainly, but I think given the proper context to that comment, I really believe that we are. And at some point, if you think about a buy versus build scenario where a customer has a need to get something done, I don't think they really care whether they're buying from a person or if they're buying from an organization. As long as they can find value in what they're acquiring in order to help them get done what they're trying to do, I think that matters. And conversely, the same is also true. Now, IBM may be selling something to Acme Corporation, but really that transaction at some point boils down to someone at Acme Corporation being the top decision maker, making a decision to purchase something from IBM and looking or having some sort of interaction with a lead salesperson from IBM. And so, yes, it's a B2B transaction, but at the end of the day, it was one person buying from one person, with both of them probably having armies of people supporting them on both sides. And so I think all of that stuff just becomes blurred as we move more and more into the digital realm.
Yeah, I still think it's all about value. You said that. Value and trust.
Yeah.
And regardless of whether it's a traditional B2B play or B2C, I think you're right. You know, we've heard for many months, years, that B2B people aren't on Facebook. Well, they are, you know, because they're still people and they still have their presence.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting in my job to see some of the items that I post on our IBM Big Data Facebook page that get shared like crazy, because they're really about us talking about other people.
Yep.
And you know, people are reacting to that. What are you seeing as what organizations are doing to take advantage of that and to build some more digital interactions with their customer constituencies and prospect base?
Well, I think today we're pretty early stages. You know, we've moved over the past 4 years of, a period of just trying to grapple with, you know, what is social, what is digital, you know, who owns it. And many organizations are still just beginning that journey. I think the front runners have kind of moved beyond that, and they're becoming to, you know, they're coming to a place where they're actually operationalizing what they're doing internally and what that means. Again, the biggest problem I see is in many organizations, social is still a silo off to the side. But I think we're seeing and we're recognizing that as social grows and its importance, that organizations need to say, hey, at least we need to listen, we need to participate, and if we are truly customer-focused, then we should at least have a presence where our customers are hanging out. And if organizations will let their customers drive the behaviors and drive the response and drive the reaction of the organization, I think they're pretty far away. You know, I think where things will head in the future is not just social. I recently blogged about how leveraging location data is a really, really interesting opportunity, certainly for retailers and local companies that are actually selling something, leveraging, you know, contextual awareness of where someone is, you know, combining that with contextual awareness of maybe some previous habits or behaviors. You know, if someone typically goes to the store once a week or buys milk at the store once a week, and if they happen to be driving by the store and it's Wednesday afternoon, the time they go, just a little prompt to say, hey, have you gone to the store next week? By the way, there's a sale for milk that's going on right now. It's a little bit creepy, and I cringe. I was actually having a conversation with some colleagues this morning about, you know, what the implications of that might be and what the implications of this emerging blend of the digital and the physical worlds and what impact that will ultimately have. And there's some pretty scary implications that may ultimately happen and that we might collectively have to wrestle with. But for the most part, there's like most things in life, I think the opportunity can be leveraged, and there will always be those that will leverage those for their own benefits, unfortunately. So I do, though, believe that most humans are good and want the best, and so there's great opportunity certainly in corporate America to leverage the opportunities before them.
That plays into my role here, big data. I'm talking big data all the time. What you just described is an ideal case study of big data in action, where mm-hmm. you're taking location data, you're monitoring the social sphere for how is this person, what's their opinion of us right now? Are they happy? Are they angry with something? Can we do something to provide them with a better service or a value-added service at the point of interaction where they may not even know the interaction is happening yet, but they just happen to be driving by the store, as you
right.
said. So,
right.
yeah, it's really, really interesting things happening right now with the bringing together of streaming data in real time and location data and tying that into the warehouse data that that we already know about this customer or interactions that we've had with them in the past.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one story that comes to mind, and I'm curious to see how they execute this, but Warby Parker, who many know, you know, they're mm-hmm. an eyeglass company that's done a couple of things simultaneously. One is they help people around the world see. They are a for-profit company, but they've also disrupted that entire distribution channel. But the most interesting thing, and why I bring that up, is they're in the midst of, you know, they've been exclusively an e-commerce distribution platform, and they've sold directly through e-commerce. And they're actually opening up either one or a few new retail stores. And they're going to leverage, or they intend to leverage, the stuff that they've learned about their consumers through a digital channel and begin to apply that into the physical realm. You know, watching, you know, for right now, anybody that has a website, there's some pretty good analytics that can understand how long people are on a page, where they got there from, you know, did they come back, where do they spend their time on that page, what do they interact with, so on and so forth. And they at least say that they're going to use some of the similar measurements actually in a physical location, you know, with cameras and all that sort of stuff to really improve the customer experience. And so I'm very, very curious to see how that plans out. And I think behind the scenes, you know, while you were talking and while I was talking, quite frankly, as we're talking about the ideal state and I think where things are heading, there's a quote from Bill Gates, and I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something to the effect of automation, and that's really what we're talking about, is we're bringing together a lot of different disparate data sets and we're adding an algorithm to it to describe some ideal state and put some measure of action into motion. And he said something to the effect of, you know, if you automate a well-oiled business process, it makes things better, you know, but to automate something that is broken and not perfected makes things exponentially worse. And I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes and trials and flips and flops along the way toward mm-hmm. where we're heading. One final thing that I'll mention is, you know, we've talked about the move into digitization, but concurrent to that that move is also the exponential increase in processing power, which is making a lot of this stuff possible. Mm-hmm. I know this is an IBM call, but even if it wasn't, I would probably mention, you know, Watson's new entrance into the realm of customer experience and customer interaction. I think that that opportunity, both from IBM and whoever comes after them offering similar technologies, and then there's several organizations working on stuff, that is really, really fascinating mm-hmm. to consider both the mass amounts of digital data that's being created, and then applying the processing power to synthesize that data and come up with some insights or recommendations in either real time or close to real time, either direct to consumer, direct to the customer, or on behalf, you know, making recommendations for the individual to suggest something or to suggest the best way to interact with that customer. I think that's fascinating and something I'm certainly watching very, very closely.
Indeed, that is fascinating. If you think about what Watson did on Jeopardy and
yep.
and how the team had fed encyclopedias, entire encyclopedias, you know, the medical encyclopedias and dictionaries and all these different types of reference books, now they're doing that, as you said, in customer service realms. So they can literally feed the entire database of an organization over its entire lifespan, every question that's ever been asked, and then it's suddenly at the fingertips of every frontline customer service person, and
right.
within just a few type keystrokes, they can call up the most likely answer to the problem right in front of them. So it's
right.
much, much faster, and yeah, really, really fascinating stuff. It's going to be very interesting to see where that all goes. Brian, I wanted to ask you, I know you go out and you speak quite a bit and you consult with people as well. What is the gestalt out there of big data right now? Do you see a higher percentage of people that are shaking their heads and saying, yes, I get it, I understand, I've got my strategy and I'm marching forward? Or is the greater percentage still kind of scratching their heads, trying to figure out what is big data, or maybe they understand that much, but they don't quite know how to build their strategy yet?
Yeah, I think the latter is probably what I run into most often.
Mm-hmm.
I think the what and the why, for the most part, is making its way through through the corporate world. I think everybody gets it. You know, we've got this big amplifier megaphone where things get overhyped really, really quickly. So I think most people are aware that, hey, there's this thing called big data, and if they're not, I'm not sure that I'd want to work with them. The challenge that I see are for most folks is, you know, what actually is valuable. And what are we actually looking for? And, you know, how much do we invest looking for stuff that we don't know exists? And I think those are the questions that are being asked right now. And quite frankly, there's still the fundamental challenge of, you know, most enterprise organizations, and I work with both enterprise and mid-sized companies, you know, enterprise organizations today, just before we even start talking about big data, you know, they've got 20 or 30 or 40 systems, customer-facing systems in many cases, that they can't really get the structured data right first. And they're still working on that challenge and trying to make inroads there. And so I think there's awareness of the potential that big data brings. I think we're all still collectively relatively early in the journey of, you know, figuring out, you know, what do we capture, how do we analyze it, what insights can we really gain, and then quite frankly, how do we take those insights that we've gained and operationalize them and bring them into the decision-making process? Because it's a new thing. There's pretty tried and true decision-making processes in a lot of these organizations, and this isn't included. And so there's just a fundamental change question of how do we begin, even if they are that far where they're getting insights and finding interesting things, it's like, well, how much do we weight that versus, you know, the feedback that we're getting from our voice of the customer program or just from our transaction results or, you know, our web data, so on and so forth.
Ryan, you are right. You've said a couple of times in this call that we could talk for an hour or two on various topics, and I agree. There are several here that we could continue to talk on, but we must end. So I do want to give people an opportunity to follow you, certainly on Twitter, at Brian Vellmure, that's Vellmure. And how else would you like people to connect with you?
So yeah, Twitter is great. My blog is pretty easy to memorize as well, brianvellmure.com, so B-R-I-A-N, V as in Victor, E-L-L-M-U-R-E.com. Feel free to reach out to me there at Twitter. I'm on Google+, Facebook, find me wherever, and let's connect. I hope to add value to you and hope to learn from anybody that chooses to connect as well.
All right, Brian, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, David.